Welcome to the HBO's podcast, where we put the hoe in Hollywood. We're your hosts, Maddie and Sam, here to discuss trending pop culture, TV, and movies.
Welcome.
Welcome back, everybody. It's your hosts, Maddie and Sam.
Yes, we're back with another episode. And what are we discussing today, Sam?
House of the Dragons, Season 2, Episode 3, called The Burning Mill. Quickly, spoiler warning, if you have not seen House of the Dragon, all of the episodes to date, specifically Season 2, Episode 3, or any of Game of Thrones, please truly kindly see yourself out. We reference all of it. So,
yes.
Okay, I'll hit you with the synopsis. As ancient grudges resurface, Rhaenys suggests that Alicent may see reason while the men around her seek bloodshed. Sir Criston proposes a bold scheme. Daemon arrives at Harrenhal to raise an army for the Blacks. Director Nita Patel, writers George R. R. Martin, Ryan Condal, and David Hancock. Let's fucking get into it.
Yeah, a lot happened.
Yeah, a lot did happen. Why don't you hit us with some overall thoughts, Maddie?
Honestly, that is kind of my overall thought. I was like, whoa, okay. A lot of things just happened. A lot of things just shifted. Like, a lot of tectonic plates just moved into new positions and some shit's about to go down. That's just was my personal synopsis. I was like, okay.
Right.
You know, episode 3, famous for it. We're about to kick it off.
I'm a little scared, though.
I will say that.
I know. I will say in Game of Thrones history, episode 3 tends to be a crazy one where, like, the story is, you know, the scene is set, right? And, like, that's when shit starts to go down. And then the penultimate, episode 9, is always, like, the craziest of the season. So,
yeah, good point.
I imagine. In this episode for the first time, with talking about House of Dragons season 2, we're actually going to do a little predictions bit at the end of it. So stay tuned for that to hear. But one of my preemptive predictions before we get there is that episode 9, no matter what happened, I feel like a lot of people are going to die in episode 9.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Also, just another quick overall thought that I really enjoyed was from the opening, you know, when they do their little credits and the embroidery, they added two little scenes to it, which I thought was like kind of a nice touch of things we just saw, which was the death of their son. What was his name?
Daenerys.
And also the hanging of the rat catchers. I mean, it wasn't nice to see. I'm not saying that, but I was like, oh, like they added it to the embroidered thing. Like, look at them like playing it out.
Oh, right. It is really cool and like funny because when you watch it closely, it's everything from Aegon's conquest all the way to date, right? Like all of the little scenes that they do. And what's like, I don't know, just juxtaposed as fuck is that like it's like all of these things that happen are horrible, but they're making it beautiful in this.
But you're not wrong.
That's a good catch. I didn't catch that. So my overall thought is I feel like, yeah, like it's just the stage is set, war has started. I love, and I said this last week, that when we get all of the complexities on like within the sides, you know, we're getting like people that are challenging like Allison's, you know, Gawain or Gawade or Gwyneth. What did she say earlier?
Guinevere. What was his name? Allison's random brother that just gets introduced out of nowhere. They have done that this season a couple times, and I don't know if I'm here for it.
Yeah. Okay. Gawain.
Gawain. Okay. Yes. So we had it. Not bad.
Yes.
I think we might have guessed ourselves.
It could have easily been Gawade. So, you know.
Could have been. Absolutely. But
we're getting like new characters introduced that are challenging dominant characters, like as he challenged Criston Cole in this before he shit his pants. And it's really just interesting to like that adds the layer of the Game of Thrones layer that I love is like, I want all of the characters with all of the stories, with all of the personalities. I want them to piss each other off. I want them to love each other. I want them to do all of those things. Like, I love seeing that.
Yeah, get scared together, cry together, conquer together.
Yeah.
Kill each other. Another thing. I get it.
So it's interesting. And I'm happy because even in the beginning, which is our first point, is we meet Davos Blackwood. And then I don't know the Bracken's name, but I do know that Maddie joined this call with the name Bracken Bitch, and I need to know why.
Okay, thank you so much for bringing this up. Justice for this little Bracken, beautiful angel-faced cherub.
Wait, okay. Wait, which one are you talking about? I feel like you might be confused.
The one in the yellow, the one that was kind of a pussy and like challenging the dark-haired one. He had the longer hair.
Oh, he's team green.
I know this. Don't flame me in the comments. I'm so sorry that I'm like such a green sympathizer. But when I saw this beautiful face come onto my screen, I was like, an angel was sent here. And instantly later, he's dead.
Yep.
Justice for my sweet cherub.
Oh, he was so
beautiful. I loved his face so much. I was like, wow, he's just gorgeous.
We have never had such differing opinions on anything in our lives before.
Listen, I think everyone in the show is hot. I can't lie. Like, all those brown-haired boys on the other side, I was like, okay, look at these cuties.
Yeah.
I don't know, something about this boy's face, I was like, you look so pure.
Yes, I am at this moment, because I didn't do this before, looking at like up the person that played Davos Blackwood, because he was so incredibly crazy looking. Anyways, I thought the actor, he had like 30 seconds to really kill it, and he killed it.
He definitely had a presence and a very like sturdy, stoic, I am not gonna let you play with me, sir. And I was just like, oh, that's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Hey-o.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We'll be excited to see you again.
Oh, his name is Kieran Burton. Found it. Yes, got it in time.
Look at you.
Go after it, Kieran. God, it was just what a performance. He like really put crazy in his eyes, and I was impressed. And I was this is who I want on the black side. I want fucking insane
Rottweiler energy. I'm not even gonna lie. I was like, oh, woof woof. Like, let's fucking go. Like, this bitch is fucking crazy. He's about to go for the neck like a little pit bull and just lockjaw you, sir. Mm-hmm. He definitely made the most of his 30 seconds. So brava.
Yeah. Great. But I do want to say just on this point that, we compare, I try to say this every episode. I have read, the entire book, Fire and Blood up until the point that we are each episode. So I don't want to ruin the series for myself by finishing the book. But I do know in the book, I did anticipate this battle happening because it's talked about, and it's also long talked about, that the Brackens and the Blackwoods, like, there's a lot of just generation after generation, they never liked each other. It's just been historical beef between these two families. One of the things that they don't mention in the show, well, they obviously show the aftermath of this big battle, but it was, I mean, thousands and thousands of people died. Like, it was a huge battle that isn't really shown. Right. And then in, I think, after the episode, Ryan Condal is talking about it. And he mentions that both the Blackwoods and the Brackens are bannermen in the Reach, which is that long stretch of land. It's where Harrenhal is. And they each, if they rallied together, would have, like, under one banner, they would have 40,000 men just from those two houses. Mm-hmm. So it's a big, like, I fear that they didn't do enough justice for it. They did mention it throughout in the council meetings, but it needed to be big. It needed to feel big, because it is. This is like, that's the first stroke of war this battle.
I did like the scene of it. Like, I was definitely affected. I was like, oh, a lot of people, burnt mill. Like, and I think, what was this episode called? The Burning Mill?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I only found out because I'm trying to be good about social media, but unfortunately I was like, oh, there was a battle that made this like happen. Like, something really happened here. So I do think that it was a little played down, but I still got there.
Yeah. You know? And I agree. I think, you know, just in terms of logistics and production and real world stuff, like, battle scenes like that are they're taxing, they're expensive. You know, there's a lot of people that need to be involved and stuff like that. Like, they were like, let's not have to hire a stunt director for this and a bunch of stuntmen and make
and a bunch of medics.
Armor. Yes. And so, yeah. So I understand. I think it was clever the way that they needed the budget for SFX for dragons.
The dragons.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So I'm like, okay. Like, do I want
that one shot was?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. But it was crazy, like, that scene. I was like, okay, like, we're in the swing of some Game of Thrones shit right now. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated mm-hmm. that.
Yep. I actually kind of want to talk about what you might be most excited for.
God,
let me just blow the whole format that we just talked about, because I have things that I'm excited for that I want to talk about right now.
Oh my gosh. I think maybe some theories, so I'll save some of that for the end. But I think, like, I'm excited to see the treachery, like the deceit. I truly like people who pledge one way and then like turn. I'm excited to see like some of that action and how that ties everything together. You know, it's always like one little decision and one little thing in Game of Thrones that like is covered up for so many years and it's finally found out 250 years later.
Yeah, what I am scared of happening, because what I was going to say I was excited for was to get more of the houses and armies and the noble families and all of them involved more. Because like I said, I just like a really filled out story with characters. But I don't know if anyone even survives to the point where the Starks would march south. And so I'm scared that everyone will die before we even get to see anybody that I want to see.
Maybe.
So this whole thing, by the way, the entire Dance of Dragons only lasts 3 years. So.
And that's how much carnage there is. That's probably why it's so short.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder how they get it to stop. Oh, okay. We're getting so.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sure. Okay.
So all right. White Walkers. This is how they get it to stop. I don't even know.
Okay. Let's talk about the Green Council with Aegon and Criston Cole and his recent seat as Hand of the King, which is the worst Hand of the King I've ever fucking seen in my life.
Yeah. No. You need a politician, not a warrior.
Yes.
It's not good positioning. Aegon is so impulsive and he is so scared of looking weak. I'm like, you're the king, bro, relax, take a breather,
like go gain some weight and fuck someone, you know,
truly
go be truly. Like Robert Baratheon, like that's the kind of king we need right now.
Yeah, he's a little bit in his head. I thought he might be like Robert Baratheon, but he's a little too hostile. Like I don't know how to describe it. He's just antsy, like he's anxious.
Right. I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and I think that with Aegon, I really despise him as a person, if he was a person that existed, but I really love his character, like a lot.
It's complex
and it's gross, but there's something about the way that this actor plays him that still like elicits like sympathy, but then he does something so horrible, like what he does to Aemond, which we'll get to in a second. You know, he's just like, oh God, he's like the worst person ever, but somehow he still like shows this like neglected child, right? Yes. Like inside, like it's very apparent.
Well, I don't think he's done anything absurdly vile yet for
on the fighting kids in the pits. You remember that? I forgot about that. Yes. So he is a vile being. They just haven't shown a lot of it yet.
Okay. See, I'm kind of an idiot, everyone. I didn't make that connection. I thought he was going there because like the brothel was also there and like he was breeding kids and just like leaving them and then they ended up fighting. I don't know. Sorry. My brain is dumb.
No. I mean, I think it's regardless if he was specifically betting on it, whatever, anybody that's in that, you know, scenario is an awful person. It's like,
yes.
So that was just the key. That was why Sir Arik left, because of how terrible Aegon was. So he was like, I don't want to protect this dude. He sucks. So he goes to fight for Rhaenyra. So that's how that whole thing happens. But they don't show Aegon at the pits. They don't show him like excited about kids killing each other or whatever. They don't they just show there's just pockets of him being shitty.
But obviously we did know that he violated the girl when he was a teenager.
Which, you know. Contract, did you catch that she was the server in the...
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And I was sad as fuck. I was girl, I'm sorry.
These old
men.
Fucking Allison, that bitch.
Yeah, okay, so he is vile. I didn't make that connection. Thank you for pointing that out. Didn't have all the info, so now I feel a bit differently. But I think you're right. He does have some qualities that you're he can be kind of sensitive, but then he does some vile shit. So it's that's what this series does so well, and Game of Thrones did so well. It's so gray, because I think that's where I was coming from with Alicent before. Mm-hmm. She was so pious. Mm-hmm. You know, she even when she was first sent to comfort Viserys in the first season, she didn't even question it because she was so young, and she just it was already so instilled in her, you just do what you have to do.
Yeah.
So I think this show really does that with a lot of characters. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're okay, Aegon, what the fuck is going on with you? And you're right, neglected child.
Right.
It's so, and I think even later on, we'll get into this a bit later, but when he does tease Aemond again, it's so childish.
Yeah.
It's just when they were kids.
Well, exactly. And that was what Aemond, his biggest thing was. But yeah, it's and then we have talked about just the difference of how Viserys fathered Rhaenyra and brought her up versus Aegon. And so he was neglected. And I think also there's another layer to that of Allison always feeling like she was second best to Rhaenyra, and her children were second best to Rhaenyra, because that motherfucker always was for Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra was his only love at one point, you know? So I think that there's probably something to be said about there being a competitive spirit between Allison and Rhaenyra, as well as Aegon and Rhaenyra, and just, you know, I don't know. It's just, he's very understandable in his insecurity and his vulnerability. I understand it really well. And yes, and you're right, that's truly what the craft is with Game of Thrones and these characters, and with George R. R. Martin and the way that he writes them is they're so complex, but they're so relatable, and even the most awful people can still elicit some sort of sympathy from you. Just because of how they're written. I don't know. I wanted to just plug that because I think that, I always forget this one's name. I hate doing this. Sorry, guys.
One of them Targaryens.
It's not Ewan Mitchell. It's the other one.
Tom something. Oh, I forgot.
Okay, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this.
There's so many names. We got to learn their names in the series. We got to learn all their actors' names. And then sometimes you confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you definitely confuse the character names. And we don't
it
even
have to. Tom Glenn Carney. Thank you, IMDb, for just oh, gosh.
Come through
IMDb. The way that he plays Aegon, and he is the only fucking person bringing any sort of humor, which I appreciate on a viewership level. There's a scene where he's putting on the king's armor, and his two fucking hype boys are there, and then they're saying something about we're gonna take the new squire out to blah blah blah. He's a virgin. And he makes them, he was like, I thought you guys, you know, took a vow of chastity. And then they start laughing, but then he keeps the serious face and they get scared of him. It's just, the way he
smiles at the end.
Yes. The way that he plays with humor in such an awful storyline is great. And I love him for that, because that actor is very funny. He's very funny.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so we'll talk more about the Aemond and Aegon thing in a little bit, but let's talk about the Green Council, Criston Cole, his side mission.
Yeah.
The mission he gave himself, rather.
Yeah. Well, first of all, this is like the first time we see him like in defiance of like Alicent.
Because you know, he can be now, because now he's the Hand.
He's the Hand, right.
He's the second best in the realm.
Exactly.
He's and the vice president.
Again, he's not a politician. He's a fucking warrior. So he's going to be like, all right, let's go fucking get him. And it is pretty much half-baked.
Yes.
I mean, sure, Sir Criston is a great warrior. And because he's so bad, you know, he's going to live for a little while in this fucking series. Yes. By pure luck and chance, this man is going to find a way.
Mm-hmm.
I just know it. I just know it.
He's going to be the only one left, and then I'm going to throw a brick at my TV.
Yep, pretty much.
I think also the idea that he's Hand, and it's something that Gawain, something that he even said was like, oh, it's so funny that, like, you know, you unseated my father as Hand, and you're lowborn. And what I think with Criston and where he's not thinking is that, like, yeah, sure, you're Hand of the King. You're Hand of a king that's, like, 16 years old and stupid and has no idea how to rule. So, like, of course, that was a bad decision. But how is he himself going to try to convince houses to switch from black to green if he's lowborn? I'm sorry. Like, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Like, he's not going to gain a lot of respect from these noble houses.
Even yeah, he's going to have to use force. He's going to have to be a brute.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what's going to happen. So it's like, even just in a diplomatic way, it's a dumb choice for him to be the face of the campaign on the road.
So Criston has absolutely no diplomacy. This man is a freaking cannon.
Yeah.
Okay. What is it? Fucking roulette, Russian roulette was a person, it'd be him.
Yeah.
This man is fucking wild. Wild card. Like,
yeah.
Remember when he beat the shit out of and killed Lena's fucking, like, love of his life?
Wedding? Yeah.
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 He's fucking crazy.
Yep. It's just exactly. And Aegon is also crazy. And I feel like Alicent, for the first time, really was at this council meeting and was like, fuck, I have made monsters out of both of these boys. Because I think that what's interesting about the two of them is that Aegon, I feel like, and it's something that Tom Glenn Carney said, ha ha ha, got it. In the Inside the Episode bit, which if you guys don't know, if you continue watching the show after the credits, they do like an Inside the Episode. It's like 5 minutes. You get to, you know, hear Ryan Condal, who's one of the writers, blah, blah, blah. The actors sometimes get interviewed. But he was like, what I think is Aegon is becoming more and more self-aware. And with that, he's getting worse and worse because he's becoming more aware of how much he just has crazy imposter syndrome right now. And he's feeling like just very insecure about his own strength and his smarts and his ability to rule. And I think that was a really good take. And so what my point is like that I think that we're just going to see Aegon get worse and worse and worse because he's becoming more and more self-aware of like how much he doesn't deserve this. But then with Criston, I think that his guilt and it's just really interesting how we went from all of the stuff with Jaehaerys's funeral and the aftermath of that last episode and Criston definitely feeling like it was mm-hmm. his fault. Because he was like fucking grandma instead of watching the babies.
God, I'm the worst nanny ever.
So we definitely know that there's some guilt there and he's already he just has such shame on himself and but then we're seeing that turn into he's getting more and more power given to him, right? So it like because this in the same right, Aegon gives him Hand of the King. And so I don't know, it's just a very weird
It is a weird dynamic.
Right. And so I don't know. I'm just interested to see how these characters play out. And I feel like, as well as I think that Aegon is going to continue to get worse, I think that Krista Cole is too. And I hope that that's self-destructive at some point.
Yeah. If I could give a metaphor, first of all, they feel shaky as fuck. And if I could give a metaphor, it would be like they're on like a deserted island and they like have built a raft and somehow they make it and they're making it and they're fucking making it for like 3 years and then the boat disbands. That's what I think their arc is going to be.
Oh gosh. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's very interesting, but I will say, you know, just to go on the location, just one other thing about Sir Criston Cole, even though he's a fucking maniac, he did say one important thing in it, that the Riverlands are the key to Harrenhal.
That Harrenhal is the key to the Riverlands.
Sorry, Harrenhal. I'm a little dyslexic as well. Harrenhal is the key to the Riverlands. By the way, I just also wanted to let everyone know that I am still a little slow. And I was like, oh, Sam, the other day, because I was like, why is it called the Riverlands? Is it because there's a lot of rivers, or is it because it rains a lot and it makes rivers? Because they show it for the first time, it's fucking pouring.
Oh, it's rainy. It's a rainy place. Yeah. So I gave her a geography lesson. We literally FaceTime and I shared my screen and I walked her through Westeros. Maddie has a lot of talents. Geography is not one of them. But thankfully, yin and yang, I am very good at geography. Yeah. So I kind of, one of the things that I loved about Game of Thrones and why I fell in love with it in the beginning is because I didn't watch it originally while it was coming out on TV. My ex and I bought the DVD, like the seasons. And when you buy the DVD set, this is back when DVD, oh my God, I'm just realizing DVDs are like not relevant at all. There are probably people listening to this that don't even know what that is.
Yeah. A relic.
Oh gosh, I still have them, but in the DVD sets, it comes with like full maps, like a poster. And so I love it. I was geeking out over it. We walked through it and basically, I mean, I can give a geography lesson on our Instagram. Go follow us, HB Host Pod. I'll give like sections and put labels and whatnot. Like, we are here now, you know? This is where Criston Cole is. This is where Daemon is. This is where Rhaenyra is. I feel like that might help to like visually see.
Because
to be honest, Rhaenyra and Alicent, the Rhaenyra, Dragonstone is not at all far from King's Landing.
It's basically like a lighthouse for King's Landing.
Exactly. That was the purpose. So, and the reason why Dragonstone is a thing is because Aegon the Conqueror, it's a volcano, and dragons like volcanoes. They only lay their eggs in volcanoes. So the dragons wanted to be on Dragonstone. And so Aegon set up like a second castle with its own throne room and its own council room and all that stuff. So that's why that's already set before Rhaenyra even gets there. Because that's where Aegon the Conqueror spent most of his time with the dragons. So with that being said, it is actually very, I know all of this inherently because I know the map so well from Game of Thrones. I like realize sometimes like when we're talking and when like I'm reading things online, I'm like, oh, people really just don't understand the geography of this.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And like how important Harrenhal is, because Harrenhal is the biggest castle in Westeros. Even though it's basically in ruin, which we see, and we will talk about, and the whole Daemon, all that shit in a second, but it is smack dab in the middle, and in order to kind of organize armies, they need, basically Daemon explains that this is the only place that's big enough that could garrison all of these different people that we're trying to get together. So Harrenhal's a big deal.
But yeah, so
I want to talk about Criston Cole. I want to talk about Gawain, and then I want to move into Vela and that scene, because that was thrilling to watch.
Yes. Yes. So again, Gawain, random, out of nowhere, fucking brother of Alicent. But I do already kind of like their relationship. I'm like, oh, she obviously summoned you, or you were sent by Otto to make sure some shit doesn't go down, but he's kind of like, I don't want to say an idiot, but like he's, I like his personality already.
Well, and so I think, so yeah, so there's a lot of characters that aren't really talked about yet. Darren is one of Allison's other sons that we've never seen. I was hoping we would meet him this season, but it looks like we're going to meet him in season three. Darren was the youngest son and was sent to Old Town. Old Town is where Samwell Tarly went to learn how to be a maester. That's Old Town. Yes. It's like basically, it's like Boston in the United States for education. Like we've got Harvard here. We've got MIT here. We've got like all Boston College. We've got all these great colleges. It's like Boston is known to be like the college, like the uni.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what Old Town is. Like, it's where you go to be fucking smart and to learn from the best of the best. So they sent Darren there because he wasn't the second son. He wasn't the first son. He was the third son. So so Darren's there. We will see him eventually. I didn't know that Allison had another brother. She had one, I think, that died. And he died when she was younger. I believe right around the time that Otto was pushing her to go to King Viserys. Because Otto was then like, okay, well, my son will never be on the throne, or, you know, I kind of lost my legacy there with my firstborn son. So let's try to have some king's babies in the family. Like, he's very much about, he's very Tywin Lannister when it comes to legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he, so this is a second son, which usually means they're just like dickish and whatever. Yeah. They get to live like princes, but they have no responsibility.
Exactly. So I like the vibes. He's probably gonna die because he's kind of dumb. but he almost gets them killed immediately. They go out on their little fucking journey. By the way, I want to say about them leaving, I really, really, really enjoyed the scoring at that specific moment when they're, like, riding out. It was a fucking, like, bop, kind of. I was like, ooh, bitch. Like, yeah. Let's go. I like this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, he's like, yeah, bitch, like, I'm not trying to sleep in the forest on the ground. I want to go to an inn and drink some beer. And maybe a little after that if the wine's good. That was so fucking great. And then they almost get killed by Baylor's fucking dragon.
Oh god, it was great. It's just,
I imagine she didn't flame them immediately though. We'll say that.
Right. So let's move into Baylor. And first of all, I just needed to put an apology in here because last week, when we saw the dragon in the distance off of Dragonstone, I thought that it was Moondancer because Moondancer was finally mentioned by Rhaenyra when she's asking Baela to go and do like surveillance of King's Landing on Moondancer. So that's why I thought that that dragon that we saw like in the distance, that gorgeous shot, was Moondancer, but it wasn't. It's actually Sea Smoke, and that's a plug for later that I won't ruin for anybody. But I know what the storyline there is going to be. Now we finally see Moondancer, and by far still the favorite dragon. Love her name. I love that Baela rides her. She looked so fucking cool. She's like a slender little beauty. She's fast as fuck.
Yeah.
Honestly, like the only thing that I disliked about that scene, because I feel like I love scenes like that because it gets your adrenaline going, and you know that she's not going to kill Kristen Cole. You can't die like that. But
you should.
I know. Well, yes, obviously. I would rather him not even die by fire. I would rather him die slowly. Like, Cersei killed that one nun. Sorry, guys, told you. Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Like, I warned you. No, I want him to die slowly. I've never said that about anybody in my life, but I lock it in. Yeah, I feel like that about Kristen Cole.
Yeah, no, he's bad. We hate... He's really bad.
He's truly the worst.
Yeah.
So when there's only just like one little technical thing that I didn't like, and there was the special effects, obviously, of the dragon coming down and chasing them into the woods. The velocity at which the dragon is going and then the velocity at which the horses are running does not match for them to be able to have made it to the woods. before she could burn them. Like, the dragon, it was just, they were too close in the shot. I don't know if anybody caught that, or, like, I don't know if you guys feel the same way or whatever, if you just didn't, like, you just didn't catch it or feel differently. But that was just, it was one thing, because when I watched it both times, it bothered me both times. That, like, it was the, they just had the dragon coming at too high of a speed for the horse. Like, I don't know. Anyways, just a technical. Okay.
Interesting. Like, I did not notice that at all. It didn't bother me, but I kind of get what you're saying, because, like, how fast can a dragon fly? Pretty fucking fast, I would assume. Well,
especially this one, because she's like a, she's a, yeah, she's a sporty petite little girl. Like, she's fucking quick, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Agile baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So no, also a really fast pull up.
Yeah, so we finally meet Moondancer, and she's gorge.
She is gorge. I like her markings a lot. I was like, yeah, ooh, look at you, pretty girl.
I liked her little, like, horny face.
Oh.
You know? Like, I really liked her face.
She was gorgeous.
Yeah.
We love Moondancer.
We love Moondancer. Oh, my gosh. We're going to rank the dragons after this.
Yes. Yes. Actually, just going back to episode one, because I think we forgot to answer what Lady Whistledown's dragon's name would be, and it actually would probably be Moondancer.
Probably.
It feels appropriate and princessy and, like, Bridgerton-like.
Yes. Yeah. So Moondancer, just some dragon wiki knowledge, was hatched with Bela. So she's as old as Bela. She is a young dragon. She's kind of small, but she's big enough. And yeah, she's just gorge. I love her.
Yeah, she is great.
So yeah, that was an exhilarating scene. And then, you know, Kristen hits Gawain. That's what's, it's like, why, like, it's just, it's, George wrote this character and just, like, was like, oh, Dwayne's a normal name. Let's just swap that D out with a G. And it's just throwing me off.
I know. And, you know, it could have been any letter. It could have been, like, a B. It could have been Dwayne. It could have been anything. Truly. Like. yeah. Thanks a lot, George.
Right.
You're really fucking us on these names.
Gosh, I know. But then Kristen hits him with the, and we'll, you know, we won't go into any fucking inns or whatever. So, like,
yeah. So that's done.
Yep.
No more fucking off, second son. This is fucking war.
Right.
Like, what are you thinking?
Right. And then, so on that note, I did want to just switch over to the Black Council and, like, what they're doing. And, like, I have got a lot of thoughts on Rhaenyra's.
Well, can we talk about Harrenhal first?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I just want to talk about Harrenhal because, number one, we finally see it, and it's that fucked up ass city skyline of Harrenhal.
Mm-hmm.
It was sad but awesome. And I just loved Daemon's movements through the fucking castle. Like, first of all, there was, like, I don't know, just a little bit of humor to it because there's no one fucking there. So I'm, like, waiting, and I'm, like, laughing, like, 30 seconds later because I'm, like, sir, who are you coming from? No one's here. Everybody left. It's,
oh my God,
so
no,
wet.
It's so funny, too, because the only guard he encounters, he just, like, punches him twice and he's down.
Yeah.
Like, no, but he, like, it's just, it was so easy to just be, like, boom, boom, okay, and then on to the next room.
Okay, and the next easiest thing is, like, hey, I'm here to take Harrenhal. And Sir fucking Simon Strong is like, apparently so. And one thing I want to say about this, because I think it's not just that they don't have the guards, like, yeah, sure, your life, whatever. But I truly think in the back of my mind, I'm like, everybody knows fucking Harrenhal is haunted. And he knows it too. He's like, listen, bitch, if you want to come in here and take up this castle and get all these ghosts and demons,
right,
have at it, babes.
Right.
Get in there.
Right. I've been trying to go home for years. Like,
literally,
get me out of here.
It's poltergeisty as fuck in here. You don't even know. The chairs be moving, Daemon.
Right. So on Sir Simon Strong, this sweet, sweet old man.
That's funny.
He gives, I saw this actually as a meme, this was not an original thought, but it what it started to be. There was a seed there, but he gives such Samuel Tarly energy. Even like, I want to just post a side by side of the two of them. They have the same facial expressions. They have the same like soft demeanor. You know, they're like, they've got their wits about them. You know, they're both smart. And Sir Simon Strong, I mean, I loved like also his shade against Laris, you know, that clubfoot motherfucker.
This mangled ass bitch fucked up my nephew, fucked up my nephew's son. Get the fuck out of here. I don't want to. What do they call him when a horse's leg is bad? He's like, fuck at him. Lame ass leg.
Lame ass leg.
Fuck. Yeah, he really dragged him through the mud. He was like, that ain't no fucking kin of mine. That ain't no kin of mine.
Like, what's crazy is that he spot the fuck on. Like, that's exactly what happened.
I know.
You know?
And it's crazy because of the way he explains it to you. He's like, you know, it's hard to light the fires here in summer. Do you see this wet ass place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it fucking, it's basically Seattle.
Yes, it is Seattle.
That's the weather spectrum there. It's fucking raining.
Yeah, literally. So I think Sir Simon Strong, just like great character addition. The most even keeled person that Damon could have come in contact with. Like, it couldn't be easier for Damon right now. We know that Kristen Cole is, well, okay, so let's actually just talk about Damon.
So one thing about Sir Simon Strong, and it relates actually back to Rhaenyra and Rhaenys in the beginning. We didn't really talk about this, but they're talking about the Bracken and Blackwoods, you know, and like trying to get them as bannermen and get them and to their side. And Sir Simon says, well, you know, a bunch of them are like fighting each other. And basically, you know, this house, like these houses have been feuding for years, like for centuries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Damon asks why, but he says, and I loved this line so fucking much, was sin begets sin begets sin.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so like, I thought it was so like thematic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a nice resounding like thematic phrase.
Right.
Because Rhaenys and Rhaenyra are talking about that in the beginning. And Rhaenys says, well, you know, people will forget why, like the reasons why the war starts. Is it because of the usurping of the throne? Is it because, you know, they took Aemon's eye? Is it because Aemon took your son? Is it because of this? So, like, you lose the reasons once people start getting pissed.
Right. One of the things that they said in the inside the episode was that this episode specifically, they really wanted to focus on generational feuds and trauma and that kind of stuff. And so we're just seeing that. We're seeing it play out over and over again. And yes, sin begets sin. It was such a good line. It should be like on the banner of like the HBO like thumbnail.
Truly.
Like because it truly is. Like that's what it is. And like simply as that's what it is. Like it's tit for fucking tat. And you know, one of the things that Rainey says too, that I think might tie, I don't know how big Sir Simon Strong's role is going to be in any of this. He obviously seems like a very gentle man, like not, you know, not crazy, not violent. But I do think that he has a bigger role to play, especially when it comes to Damon. I hope that he becomes one somewhat of like a mentor for Damon if Damon's going to be out on this solo journey. But Rhaenys also says, like, I forget exactly what it is, but, like, the gods hate, you know, fighting amongst kin the most. And so even with Sir Simon Strong's situation where he lost his, you know, two of his nephew and then his great-nephew, Lionel and Darwin. Right. And now he's like, he's got beef with Laris.
Yeah.
It's almost like that's another situation where there's just generational shit between and fighting amongst kin. So, he's definitely not happy with Laris. And I thought that, his answer was diplomatic and great. And he did drag him through the mud. And that was wonderful to just watch. With Damon, with him in this vision situation that happens.
Yes.
I was wondering when some other magic was gonna come into play here.
Yes.
Besides just the dragons, but I'm thinking, obviously, we all know that Harrenhal is cursed, and, you know, Daemon is a he's got his own demons, Daemon the demon, Daemon's got demons, and then he has these visions, and the one, like, huge question mark that I have is, and, like, we don't really have to talk about it, it's just something to note for, like, later, when he sees, like, teenage Rhaenyra with the Jaehaerys two-headed, right? So obviously there's something of guilt in that. But then he goes to, like, the garden, or what was a garden outside of Harrenhal. And then there's this random woman that shows up that we haven't seen before. She reminded me, the way that she was dressed and what her presence, she reminded me of, like, a Red Witch from Game of Thrones.
Same.
And she says, you know, you'll die here. I don't doubt that I think he probably does die at Harrenhal. He's going to die on that hill.
Probably.
That's who Daemon is. they're making that, you know, that saying, they're going to make it true. I have no doubt at all that he won't die there. But it was weird because I'm like, who is this person that we see randomly? Is she the ghost of Harrenhal? Like, is she like a, I don't know, kind of like a moaning Myrtle, if you will. Like,
yes, Harry Potter reference. Get in here.
So I don't know. It was just something to know. We don't have to talk about it because we literally get no context. It's not even something that we can decipher. You know, there's literally no context. So anyways, but Daemon obviously is struggling a little bit mentally right now, which is not great for us. And with that, I do really want to talk about the Black Council, because the one thing that, like, I'm just, like, it must be so hard for Rhaenyra. I was thinking about it when, in the very beginning, the first, because we have a few council meetings with Rhaenyra, with this, like, this fucking, you know, I don't know, like, carriage of dudes, young and old, all fucking stupid, or not stupid, but just all very dude-like.
Yeah,
to rush into war. And then in the first one, it was, well, Daemon is at Daemon went to Harrenhal, but no one's heard from him,
right?
And it's like, how, like, anxious that would make me as Rhaenyra. Like, not only is the husband the father of my kids, we're, like, actively at war, you're there by yourself with just your dragon, who knows if like Alicent or Aegon already sent people there, are you dead? Like,
right.
I haven't heard from you. Also, the way that they left on negative terms. Daemon is untrustworthy, and Daemon is also can be very spiteful. So I'm like, it's almost like, are you still even fighting for me?
Right.
Or are you going to rise up and say that you're the one true king? Like, you just never know what to expect from him. Which is precisely what the fight was about last episode. So, like, it's just the one dude her maester saying that I was just like, oh my God, if I heard that myself, that would be like a knife to the gut. That, like, this person that I was supposed to trust the only person I could trust 100% is now, like, AWOL, and I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, it must be difficult. That was something that I really just wanted to say, is that Daemon.
Yeah, no, I agree. She doesn't really have anyone there to back her up. Although Rhaenys is fucking backing her up.
Thank God that Rhaenys, my queen. God, my Scorpio queen.
Yes, the queen that never was and should have been.
Right.
Because this bitch is obviously counseling in the correct, like, direction.
You know, they're the only two people in the show, besides Viserys, RIP, that actually care about the goodness of the realm. I would say potentially Otto at the same time, I think, cares about the wealth and the health of the realm, but he still has his own agenda. But Rhaenys and Rhaenyra are the only ones that are like, no, let's not turn this into a war if there's anything that to be done about it beforehand. And that's true and, like, honest and commendable rulership. So Rhaenyra is just getting fucking, I don't know, just like smacked left and right by all these guys saying, we need to act now, we need to act now. And the thing is, like, I could never be queen. I don't know. I I remember saying this at some point too. I don't remember if it was on the pod or not. But like, I would have been like, yep, you're right. Send the fucking dragons. Let's go. Burn the red team down to the ground. Like, I'm just going to end this before it even starts. I feel like that would be, I would be very aggressive. I'm also ruled by fucking Mars. So for my astrology girlies, like, it's just, I'm Athena.
So no, you're fucking Aries, babes. Like, you are God of War, 100% coming through to fuck shit up. Oh,
Scorpio too. Scorpio Sam, baby.
Yeah, I know. But to be honest, like, I can't disagree with you on this one. Like, yes, I would love to be like, okay, you're going to be a rash ruler. But like, I think what's interesting about the men's point of views, not that I agree, but I understand why, like, they feel the way that they do, because things are already taking form.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're like, they're on untruths or whatever, like, there's already been bloodshed. People are already pissed. Like, you already know that Sir Criston Cole is on his way with like a horde of fucking men.
Right.
You know, like, there's just a lot of things already happening, and it's like, fuck, like, well, I don't want to do this, but to protect my family and my throne, I may as well burn them out before it starts. But she's trying not to be that way, which I think is fucking commendable, because you're right. Like, I don't know if I'd be able to do it.
Right.
I hope I would, to be honest.
Right. No, and then, like, and the thing is, it's not that, because I think that Rhaenyra's council is, first of all, let's just, I mean, the Green Council, bunch of fucking idiots, and now we have Criston Cole as Hand of the King, and no Otto, who was actually the only smart person in that room, if I'm being honest. And I hate myself for complimenting Otto 2 podcast episodes in a row, but it's true. It's just a fact of the matter.
It's true.
The council that he has is awful. And then the council that Rhaenyra has, I actually don't know who these guys are, person by person, but I do want to look them up just to see, like, what families they're from and all that stuff. But the thing is that what they are saying is very true.
Yeah.
Timing is everything when it comes to war. And if you are unprepared, or if you hesitate, like, I always say hesitation is a no. Like, hesitation is a no, meaning that's what it means if somebody hesitates to give them something.
Yes. Or
if you hesitate to, like, pull out, you know, in front of somebody else when you're driving. Like, if you hesitate, you're in a worse situation than if you would have just been like, yep, go.
Right, do it. Exactly.
And like, in so many situations like that, hesitation is the worst thing that you can do. So, and I think that that might be one of her downfalls. I hope it's not, because it was the commendable and diplomatic thing to do. But I don't know. I do agree a lot with what the guys are saying. They're not all just assholes. They are genuinely think that this is what should be done, and because that's probably what should be done. But it looks like, now that we have the situation with Rhaenyra and Alicent that happened, which we'll talk about, I feel like, yeah, Rhaenyra is going to just pull the fucking plug on this shit and get it started.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think with this conversation that is had between them, it gives her the confirmation that she needs to be like, okay, like, this bitch really doesn't give a flying fuck, which is so crazy, because I'm like, I mean, I think it's the same thing though. I think Alicent realizes, like, so many things have been done. She may not want this all to happen, but she's like, fuck, like, at this point, like, I have to stand on the side that I am standing on.
Right. So with that being said, let's just talk about them. Then we'll circle back to Aegon and Aemond quickly, and then we'll do our predictions.
Okay, so firstly, this bitch pulling a motherfucking sister act, which was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. I was like, okay, you are so funny. I thought she was just going to go in like a dirty little peasant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No, she's going in as a septa, because obviously Alicent only goes to church.
Yeah.
That's the only thing she does outside of whatever the fuck else she does.
I mean, the internet is blowing up with the Conqueror, you know, and it's just, God. First of all, this conversation was so fucking hard to watch. I do want to say I loved that Rhaenyra pulled a fucking shiv on this girl.
Then she immediately was like, oh, I've begun badly. And let me tell you, the Aries moon that was revealed was so funny. I was like, girl, that impulse. She also had no plans on what would happen if this didn't go well.
Right.
But I do want to say on that note, I think actually that says something. Like, that's a big, like, thing about their relationship. Although it was a risk, at the end of the day, she still knew she could trust Allison to have that conversation, which to me, like, there's a level of trust that, like, you just have with some people.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that even now on opposite sides, like, Rhaenyra still knew that, like, in the depths of her soul, like, I can have this conversation and Allison, like, it's gonna be fucking a little risky, but, like, nothing crazy. Like, we'll have the conversation and get out of it.
For any new listeners, Madison ships the fuck out of Allison and Rhaenyra. So,
Rallison. Rinallison. I don't know.
I love Alanira.
Oh, Alanira. Oh, so cute. Okay. Also, I just want to say the face acting on
Emma Darcy.
Thank you. I almost said Amelia because, again, the Amelia Clark, Emma Darcy, Amelia, Emily. Anyways. You know, and they were both Targaryens. It's there's so many fucking names. I'm sorry. But her face acting was so crazy good. Sorry, their face acting.
Their face acting, yeah. Yeah, it's tricky when we're going back and forth talking about Rhaenyra and then Emma. But yeah, their face acting was insane, especially because there was zero body language to be had. They were very still.
Yeah,
they were she just, she had full none.
Full none. Only, any hair.
Forehead down, no hair, just... when she starts crying, like, it was moving in so many ways, especially my major, like, notes were just that, first of all, Allison was just withholding that fucking information for so long. I'm like, you could have just led with this, about, like, Aegon and all that stuff. Like, it took them a long time to get there. I appreciate it because I love seeing them both. But, when Emma is, or when I'll talk in character, but like when Allison tells Rhaenyra, no, he, like, I swear on my, you know, my dead mother, basically. Yeah. That he switched and Rhaenyra believes her and starts to, like, it just the tears that well up and like how awful that must feel because the only thing that Rhaenyra has ever had in her life was her father's pride, really. Right. And so thinking that, okay, in one fell swoop, this could have, like, he could have changed his mind on his deathbed. Like, that's, like, how awful that is. And I think that Emma played it so well. Like, it
agreed.
Was.
Yeah. And then the realization of the story. So, by the way, I just want to say this, too. Like, maybe Allison withheld the information, but I don't even think she did purposely because the way Rhaenyra asks, like, oh, like, did he mention me in his last words? It was so endearing and authentic. Like, she wasn't trying to gain information for a motive. Mm-hmm. It was more like, I want to cherish his memory. Like, did he say anything? Like, what were his last words?
Right.
And even her saying, like, oh, Viserys, like, my father loved me and I believe he loved you. She, to me, it was such an authentic scene from her. She did such justice. Mm-hmm. Like, as Rhaenyra, like, having, like, real compassion for, like, someone that she loved.
Yeah.
You know, it felt really nice, honestly. Yeah. And the realization of when the Aegon story came out, again, she was just asking, like, an authentic question. She was like, oh, like, you know, or actually, I think Allison just came out with it. She was like,
She did.
Yeah.
And that it was the first time that she felt like, she had to explain herself. I think that was where I was just getting annoyed by it because I'm like, if you really, like, you should have had this conversation with Rhaenyra. This conversation should have happened as soon as Viserys died and as soon as you went and tried to put the crown on Aegon. Like, it should have, you owed Rhaenyra that. And I get that Rhaenyra wasn't around. She went back home that night. So it wasn't like, logistically it wasn't, you know, she couldn't have just run to Rhaenyra's room first and been like, this is what happened, this is what he said. But it felt like Alicent was, like, withholding the explanation. And that was what was annoying, because I'm like, Rhaenyra is owed an explanation. She's been told since she was 13 years old that this was hers. And then all of a sudden, with no communication from your side, only acts of violence from your side, am I being told that this isn't, that you don't believe this to be true? Like it's, I just feel like Rhaenyra was owed much more than that from Alicent. And so the fact that it took her so long, because if Rhaenyra were to come to me and I were Alicent, I would have explained the whole thing without even having to be asked. I would have been like, this is what happened. This is like my understanding of it. This is what Viserys said. Like, I didn't try to usurp your throne. He did. This is what I believe. Like, it would have just been more of an explanation. So I feel like she was holding her cards really close to her chest when it wasn't just like she didn't deserve to. I don't know. Anyway, Rhaenyra deserved more quicker is what I'm saying. But I understand. I understand why it all happened. It was just like, I'm just like, just fucking get to it. Like,
You know. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that the truth is out, but also, again, like, that confirmation is good and bad. It's good because we know, but it's bad because, like, we know that people, like, there's about to be a lot of fucking blood and carnage. Like, there is going to be bloodshed, people are going to die, and I think, I think this episode is, like, one episode where, like, a major character didn't die, I don't think, so I'm like, oh, shit, like, when one character doesn't die in a whole episode of Game of Thrones, it scares me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, a lot of people are going
to
die.
Yeah, right. We're about to get 3 bodies next time. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to Aegon and Aemon in the brothel scene. And then we'll move into predictions.
We should have led with this, but, you know.
Gosh. Okay, well, here we go. Aegon's taking out the squire to, you know, I don't know. Just loses virginity,
you know, debauchery.
Yes, all the debauchery.
Yeah, just, he's going out there, he's being the king, you know, whatever. And he starts opening all the curtains and there's people performing sex acts. By the way, that schlob on a knob was tense. I'm so sorry to bring that up, but I really fucking had to, because that was fucking porn, baby. Like,
yeah,
that was.
Yeah, it's so funny because Maddie and I just had an offline conversation about how I didn't think that any of the sex that was included in Game of Thrones was unnecessary. I thought that it was all story building. I don't know if that dick in the mouth was really that necessary.
Think it was, but here we are. So I needed to throw that in. I needed to mention it because I think it was a bit shocking. Anyways, so we get to Aegon and he opens the curtain and who do we find? Aemon with the headmistress curled up in his little La Pieta position. And, you know, fucking Aegon is just drunk and laughing and kind of picking on him. And, like, Aemon, at first, I was like, fuck, I don't know what he's about to do. Like, I really couldn't predict it. And boy, was I happy with not being able to predict it, because what they did was fucking great. This man stands up. He turns into a man in that fucking instant, okay? he stands up, turns around. We get straight peen to the camera.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was like, okay, this was like a power move.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was definitely like a. And like, what, you know, what I hate about it is not even the nudity. What I hate is what he said when he walked out. He was like, it's fine. You know, your squire can have this whore. Like, they're all the same or something along those lines. Which makes me really sad, because Aegon now tarnished a relationship, probably Aemon's only healthy relationship. I don't know if you can call it healthy, but it seems healthy that, like, he can rely on her and he trusts her and he finds comfort in her. And now I feel like Aegon just completely trashed that.
And something on that, which I think is really interesting, from, like, I think, like, 2 episodes ago, Aegon talks about Aemon and he's like, yeah, but he's as loyal as a fucking dog. And I'm like, you better be careful, Aegon. You're dumb as shit. And, like, you treat him like shit. He might be loyal because, like, the crown, and he's also the second son. If they're not fuck-offs, they're gunning for your throne. Right. There's only one of two positions with the second son. They either don't give a fuck about it, or they're waiting for you to die.
Right.
You know?
So, okay, let's go right into predictions then, because that was going to be one of my first ones that I talked about, was just where... There is something I went into thinking about this, and I don't have any full-fledged predictions, so I apologize. There's nothing like super crazy. There's not like hot tea that I'm about to serve, but there is a quote from Littlefinger in Game of Thrones where he is trying to train Sansa on how to find, like how to really know people. And he says, you have to ask about everybody. What is their greatest desire? Like, what are they ambitious for? And, with a lot of these characters, I truly don't know. With Aemon, I think I don't know if he wants the throne. He has mentioned that he's better suited for it. He's trained, he's diligent, he's got great work ethic, et cetera, et cetera. Like, he's stronger, he's more level-headed. I think, I don't know. But like, he has talked about it before. So I'm like, is the throne what he wants? Because some of his actions prove otherwise. For example, in season one, he wouldn't let Aegon just leave. Aegon wanted to just flee, and Aemon, and then in that case, would have taken the throne. He wouldn't let that happen. Then in this episode, in the small council, Aegon is trying to be like brave and excuse me, say that, you know, I'm going to fly on Sunspear or whatever his dragon's name is. But he says, like, I'll fly with Kris and Cole and, you know, to Harrenhal. And then Aemond is one of the ones that says, that's very brave of you, but, you know, we can't risk it. Stay here. Like, there are points where Aemond is, like, saving Aegon from himself. But why would he do that if he actually wants the throne? And then with this whole pickle of Aegon still picking on him and acting like he's the weaker, younger, et cetera, I'm just like, do we see a snap from Aemon happening in the future?
I don't know, because I think, like, those are really good points to make. And I think that also just thinking about Aemon's nature, he is strong, but he's not, like, I don't think he's been super volatile. Like, yeah, when he took Vhagar, he was kind of an ass, you know, slapping girls. I was not into that. But they were also kids. He was feeling cocky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, like, high on fucking dragon fumes.
Yes.
But I think, like, he's more tender, actually. Like, even with him, like, laying with the mistress and... I don't know. Like, I don't know if we'll see him snap, but maybe Aegon will do something that really fucking gets under his skin. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him, because he gives me like vibes. Like, if you back me into a corner, I'll do something fucking crazy.
Yes, exactly that. Like,
he is very much into a corner.
Right. It feels very much like the, you know, honestly, him chasing Luke in season one with the dragon felt very out of character for him, for me. Like, he's not like a kind of brash person where he's making like decisions based on emotion. Like, he's incredibly logical.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, my head goes to, is he slowly and methodically planning Aegon's downfall, or is he just waiting for the inevitable of Aegon to fuck it all up himself? Because that's where I feel like it's going to go.
I think it's probably the latter.
Yeah.
To be honest, he's like, just keep him in this fucking seat as long as he can. Because also, when you're in the seat, you're the target.
Right.
You know? So maybe Aemon doesn't want all that heat. I mean, he does have Vhagar. He's like, okay, like, if that happens, then like, I'm going to have to fight. It's going to be a lot.
Right. I foresee a Aemon and Daemon battle. I think that there are a lot of cues in season one and so far in this season that will potentially happen. I think that they balance each other out.
Agreed.
Very well. I mean, even though if we're talking like dragon for dragon, obviously Aemon's got Vhagar, and she's just a huge bitch. But Caraxes is slender, slim little dude. Looks like a red snake.
Snake.
Yeah. And Damon's got war strategy. I mean, he's fought in wars before.
Yeah.
So I think that they're a good match for each other. Okay. Any other predictions or?
Okay. Theories? So not quite predictions, but like what I would like to see happen. Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to see like a, what is it? Like a fucking double spy where like you're on one side, but then you flip to the other, but you're really on the other, but you're actually on the other. Like, I would like to see that character. I would like to see that happen. And oh God, I'm so, again, just such an Alicent fucking, like enthusiast. I don't even mean to be, but I would really like to see her go through like a deconstruction era, especially like on the religion shit. I just don't know if that's going to happen, but it would be really interesting to see her character go through something like that.
I agree. I think that that's, yeah, I would love to see that play out.
Yeah. And also, just going back from clips, obviously, I had talked to you about this off pod, but I think this was in the overall season, like, trailer. One of these fucking, I think it was, like, last week, but we see, like, a clip of, like, it's, like, 1 millisecond of, like, a woman, and she's in a red hood, and she's, like, looking back over her shoulder. And I, you know, you had brought it up earlier, it's giving Red Witch vibes, and I'm like, oh, this bitch is old as fuck. That she was so old, so she's probably the, she's probably, I hope she's around.
Oh, Melisandre.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
And also, like, I forgot that Melisandre, like, I mean, yeah, I knew that she was magical, but, like, I forgot that she, like, birthed, like, a demon.
And she's got that necklace that makes her look young, even though she's, like, an old, decrepit lady. And what makes sense is that if she would have been around back when the Song of Ice and Fire, Aegon the Conqueror's, which we have to just say Aegon the Conqueror every time we're talking about him, Aegon the Conqueror's vision, set up what this whole thing is about, it would be really exciting because that's her whole mission with the Lord of Light is to fight death. And then as soon as in Game of Thrones, also huge spoiler, as soon as the war is done with the Night King, she just goes out and fucking dies. She's like, all
right. She walks into the fucking fire, right?
No, she walks out into the snow. She takes off her necklace. She like gets naked, takes off her necklace and just fucking
over. She like, disintegrates.
And Davos and Fire are like, this fucking bitch, I swear, she never ceases to confuse the fuck out of me.
Yeah, and surprise us. Yeah, so I hope that she makes, like, a fucking ancient-ass appearance in this because it would be cool. So sick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think those are kind of, like, my overall, like, they're not exactly predictions, but kind of. I'm like, I hope these things happen. It would be really fun to see.
Right. I have, well, first I just wanted to say, I don't know how big of a, I just feel like Whiteworm, who is the, she's kind of Rhaenyra's, master of secrets.
Ooh, or master of whispers.
Yeah. So I think that, we get Lord Larys that's, promoted to that in this.
Are they just like speaking chisme?
Yes.
It's kind of like their thing. They're just hot gossip girlies.
They're gossip girlies. They've got little
goodies. Oh my God. That's really funny.
Yeah, I would love to be that.
Kind of a good job.
Right. So I think, you know, we get Lord Larys that because Aegon says it, like, you know, my father didn't think that a Master of Whispers was necessary, but his father was also an incredibly peaceful king. So Aegon definitely needs it, and Lord Larys is there for the taking with his fucking club foot. But then we get Whiteworm, who I don't trust, really. She's been gaining trust with me lately, and I think that she's a lot like Varys in Game of Thrones, where she's going to be loyal to who she thinks is actually the best. And clearly, and she doesn't like the Hightowers at all, so in that sense, I trust her. But again, you got to look at what people truly want, and are her intentions altruistic, or will she switch upon Rhaenyra just like Varys switched upon Daenerys? You know, like, is it as soon as Rhaenyra goes out for blood, is Whiteworm gonna switch up on her and see that the havoc that she's wreaking and then turn on her? But I do think the White Worm has a big role to play. She's already played a huge role this season. She played a huge role last season with just actually making things happen. So that was one thing that I want to know. And then my last thing is, this is just kind of a question, is when we're thinking about things in terms of like ultimate ambition, what the fuck does Laris even want? Like, is it power?
Fuck Alicent.
Well, obviously, but he's already got her feet and jerks off in front of
her. It's not like, enough. He needs to feel the warmth of a woman, okay? Like, it's not the same. It's not the same.
No, I obviously
have some fucking piggy toes. Okay. Like,
obviously, that would be a good addition, but I don't think that that's where his true ambitions are. Like, he wouldn't get, because like what he, and one of the things that he did in this episode was he told Aegon, he went and told him that the rumor is that if you leave, you're basically like giving up the ruling to your mom and your brother, which right. then put, it feels like he's wedging space in between Aegon and Daemon.
Agreed.
And Aegon and Alicent. Like, he's mm-hmm. trying to get in somehow, but why? It's that he's never going to rule. He's never going to have children with great ambitions. Like, he killed his father and his brother with the, you know, in the blink of an eye. Like, that his character confuses me, because with Otto, it was apparent. With Aegon and with all of them, they're very easy to read. With Kristen, even, he's easy to read in terms of what they want and why they do the things they do. Laris is like, and then in seasons past, like Littlefinger, very easy to read, you know, wanted the most power for himself and wanted to make a name for himself, came from nothing. Laris is like, I don't know, he's a creepy, creepy spider, you know, just hanging around. Like, is he going to bite me? Is he, you know, I don't know. It's very, we don't have to talk about that, but that's just my big burning question, is where does he want to see himself? You know,
That's a great question. That is a great question. Now I'm going to have to ponder on it, because I'm like, where does he want to see himself besides under Allison's dress? Because that's a given.
Right.
Everybody wants that. Yeah, exactly. I want that. And so does, she just doesn't fucking know it, or she knows it. They won't admit it to themselves. And again, it's such a sad story.
Also, something hearkening right on back to episode one, our episode, we had talked about the fact that Allison and Kristen were fucking in what looked like Rhaenyra's chambers. They are. She's in Rhaenyra's chambers. She's fucking on Rhaenyra's old bed.
Oh my God.
Even some of the stuff that they did with the cinematography, like, I saw some videos of like them comparing the way that like his like armor is put down and like movements, just like subtle things that is exactly like how it was when he slept with Rhaenyra way back when.
It's so annoying.
So they fantasize about her the entire time they're in there.
Yeah, truly. Wow. They truly manifested this war, because they can't get this girl off their minds. Like, my goodness.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I think that concludes the episode.
Yeah, it does. Thanks for listening. Definitely check us out on socials at HBHosePod. And come see us next week. We're excited to get into these theories in these episodes.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. Try not to die, people. Bye.
Goodbye.